Chapter 14. The communications time lag wasn't a problem, only when the crew was on Newark. It also meant I would have no idea what was going on with the Flower until that ship returned from its scouting mission. In making plans, we had discussed the possibility of the Flower using its armaments to pound the Kristang settlement from orbit and eliminate the threat entirely. As a frigate, the Flower wasn't designed for orbital bombardment, but it did have a railgun, and we could make do. We discarded that idea for two reasons. If the first shot didn't take out every single one of the Kristang, we'd have a hell of a time hunting them all down. We had no certain knowledge whether the Kristang were all in one place or scattered across the planet. We couldn't afford to have the Flower lingering in orbit for a long time, exposed, searching for Kristang one by one. Second, and most important, our entire plan hinged on our presence on Newark not being detected. If we were discovered, the Kristang there could call for help, and then we'd be screwed, whether we had a beat-up stolen frigate or not. If, or maybe when, a Kristang ship arrived to pick up the lizards on the surface, it would not be good for that ship to find all the lizards on the surface dead, with evidence of them having been attacked from orbit. That would cause the Kristang to intensely scan the surface, and inevitably find us. No, what we wanted, if a Kristang ship arrived, was to find only a bored, desperate gang of lizards who wanted to get off the surface and depart Newark as soon as possible. We wanted them to find that and nothing else. To prevent the Kristang on the surface from detecting a human presence on Newark, Skippy had another trick up his sleeve. Because he couldn't get close enough to handle it himself, he had loaded a submind into the computer system of the Flower, complaining all the time that the frigate barely had memory storage enough to hold a dumb-dumb monkey brain and was completely inadequate to contain a useful AI submind. Even stripping out the Kristang software completely, the dumbed-down submind was dangerously unstable, and we had to hope it would survive long enough to do its job before it broke down. The submind's job was to infiltrate the two small satellites the Kristang had in orbit, infiltrate and overwrite the existing processing system so the satellites would from then on ignore any images or sensor data about humans on or around Newark. When the Kristang scavengers looked at the surface from a satellite camera, if those satellite cameras or sensors were pointed at a human settlement, the Kristang would not see anything unnatural. The images would be edited in real time to show nothing but blank, boring snow, mud, and tundra. If that worked, we only had to worry about a Kristang aircraft flying over us and someone looking out the window. Hopefully, that was unlikely, and from our own satellites, we would have plenty of warning if a Kristang aircraft approached where we were hiding. The Flower was going to drop off two tiny, stealth Theranan satellites for our use. One satellite would be in polar orbit to cover the planet's entire surface once each day. The other would be moved in geosynchronous orbit above our hiding place, after we decided where that was. Skippy could access satellite data through the micro wormhole, and we could access the satellites in real time through an encrypted tight beam laser link. The only way the Kristang could detect the satellite feed is if one of their aircraft happened to fly through the communications laser beam, a beam less than a human hair in diameter. Since we would be able to see their aircraft approaching and be able to see everything the Kristang were doing and intercept all their communications, it would be impossible for them to sneak up on us. All this was according to Skippy, who would be by himself at Skippy's garage and gas station on the other side of the star system. I had faith in Skippy. He had certainly earned it. What bothered me was not our plans or our ability to implement such plans or the top-notch people I was privileged to have under my command. What bothered me was our rotten luck. Lieutenant Colonel Chang had told me, back when I was trying to convince our original merry band of pirates on Paradise to follow me on an ill-defined, ultra-high-risk mission, that he agreed to sign on not because I was brave or smart, but because I somehow was lucky. That I had a knack for being in the right, or wrong, depending how you looked at it, place at the right time. I do not believe in astrology, or numerology, or any of an infinite number of increasingly wacky conspiracy theories. But there was no one who could deny that luck was a real thing. Skippy had hinted more than once that there was no such thing as luck, that humans conceived of luck because we had no idea how the universe truly worked. Whatever. What I knew for sure was that our luck so far on this mission was crap. Places where we should have found Skippy's magic radio for talking to the collective were empty or mysteriously blown apart. The mission had lasted longer than it should have, because things that should have been in a place were not in that place. For no logical reason Skippy could explain. In fact, Against all logic, Skippy knew of. Rotten luck. Then we jumped into a trap that could not have been set for the Dutchman. No way could the Theranon have anticipated the Dutchman would arrive there at that time. A trap we'd barely escaped from. Now, against all odds, we had managed to travel between stars in a ship with no functioning reactors, traveled to an unwanted, useless star system that no one cared about, and what do we find in the middle of nowhere? A group of Kristang. Crap. What the hell were Kristang doing on Newark? What are the odds, right? That is totally rotten luck. Rotten luck that made me afraid that my good luck had run out and it would be all downhill from here. Downhill for all of us, not only for me. Was this karma coming back to bite me in the ass? Had I been so lucky in the past that I'd cashed in all those chips, and now I was in debt to the house? I felt useless sitting aboard the Dutchman doing nothing, while Chang was on a scouting mission with the flower. Skippy, I asked, you're sure none of us could stay behind to help fix the ship? Help? From monkeys. By doing what, burping and scratching yourselves? No, Skippy. I was heartened to hear he'd gotten a bit of his snarkiness back. I'm talking about us burping and scratching ourselves at the same time. Oh, well then, that changes things. In that case, no. Joe, I'd love someone to stay aboard to give me someone to talk to. No offense, you all need to get off the ship. There isn't going to be any oxygen here. Most of the ship won't have any atmosphere at all part of the time. Until I can get a reactor back online, the shield generators are going to be dead soon, and the radiation will kill you biologicals. Biologicals? That was an improvement over meat sacks. Skippy may be warming to us. Still, 5 months? 5 months is a long time. Skippy would be alone aboard the Dutchman. The entire crew would be stranded on an unknown, unexplored planet. Long. 5 short months is a genuine grade-A freaking Skippy miracle. Joe, to rebuild this ship, I have to use raw materials scavenged from the ship and gathered from the planet's moons. In order to build the tools I need, I first have to build other tools, to build other tools, to finally build the tools to fix the ship. Then, I have to begin fixing the ship. You know those so-called reality shows, where some scruffy-looking guy is out in the wilderness, all he has is a knife, and he's supposed to survive for a month? A knife, plus a camera crew with satellite phones and a helicopter, I pointed out. But yeah, I know what you mean. That guy on TV has at least a knife. I'm starting with only a paperclip, and I'm rebuilding a gosh darn starship, Skippy complained. You're right, that guy on TV has a camera crew if he gets in trouble. All I have is a barrel of monkeys, and you'll be way over on the other side of the star system. If something bad happens before the Flying Dutchman is ready, like if a Theranon ship arrives looking for us, we are totally, totally screwed. Yeah, I know. I'd be more comfortable if we had some margin for error. You really need the flower? Absolutely. First, I need that ship to dip into the gas giant's atmosphere for collecting helium-3 to refuel the reactors. After that, the flower contains materials not readily available in this planet's moons or ring system, so that frigate and our old busted-up Ruha Dodo have to be sacrificed to rebuild the Dutchman. Well, I understand that. My problem is you have all our chips on the table. All 3 Theranon dropships have to stay here? One of them can't stay with us on the planet? With those Kristang hanging around, we'll be sitting ducks if the only way we can get around is by walking. Sorry, Joe, no can do. I'll be mining this planet's moons and rings with those dropships, and with robots that weren't designed to operate independently of the ship. Leaving a single dropship with you would increase my estimated repair time from 5 months to 7. That is 2 additional months, during which the Kristang on the planet might discover your presence, or a Kristang ship might arrive to pick them up and detect you from orbit, or a Theranon scouting force may come to this star system and find our stolen star carrier. We have to balance the risks. You're right. You're right. I would have made the same call. In fact, I did, the first time Skippy explained his plan to me. I still didn't like it. The flower jumped back in from its scouting mission right on time. It would take the frigate over 2 hours to match course with the dead and drifting Dutchman, so Chang transmitted his data immediately. There was no reason to wait. We couldn't wait. Conditions aboard the star carrier were becoming unlivable. We needed to get off the ship soon. Or not. It was my decision. I needed intel. Skippy pored through the data recovered from our stealth satellites, the Kristang satellites that Skippy's submind had successfully infiltrated, and Kristang databanks on the ground. It was, as Skippy was fond of saying, good news and bad news. His initial guess about the Kristang group there was correct. There were a scavenger crew that had been dropped off almost a year ago to comb the surface of Newark for the debris of a crashed Elder starship. Their leader was a third son of a second-tier leader of a minor clan. As such, he was desperate to recover something useful to raise his family's fortunes with the clan. With him, he had five other semi-trusted clan brothers and 28 forced laborers. The forced labor came with Kristang who were criminals or slaves captured from other clans, or clan brothers whose families were deeply in debt and had sent their sons to work off part of the debt. The scavengers were a low-budget group, using second- or third-hand worn-out equipment without sufficient spare parts or expertise for properly maintaining the equipment. Originally, they had a beat-up dropship and two aircraft. One of the aircraft had crashed near their base, and the leader didn't want to risk flying their only dropship, so they had one functional aircraft. They had six sets of powered armor suits, one of which were no longer working. And since they landed a year ago, five laborers had died in accidents, plus another two had been executed for disobedience. Morale in the scavenger group was bad, to say the least. They were all males, not even a single female with them. They had no fresh food, not even for the leaders. Their base camp was cramped with limited recreation facilities, their one medic had died in an accident, and their medical treatment capability was provided by an AI that worked only about half the time. From their records Skippy had access to, the Kristang had remained within 300 kilometers of the base. That was where the debris from the crashed Elder ship was buried. All that was good news for us. The bad news was about geography. Only the equator of the planet was livable. The remainder of that world was frozen solid, with awful weather and temperatures humans couldn't survive, and the ice pack and glaciers closer to the equator were mushy from the summer warming, with the surface there too treacherous for habitation. The last thing we wanted was for an ice cavern to collapse on us. Of the land exposed along the equator, much of it was frigid swamp and spongy thawing tundra, with no place for us to burrow into and hide. Three-quarters of the equator was ocean. There wasn't a lot of real estate for us to choose from. The site Skippy recommended was uncomfortably close to the Kristang base, less than 1,300 kilometers to the east. The terrain there was grassland, eroded canyons and hills, with caverns Skippy thought would be good places to take shelter away from prying eyes. "You have scans of the subsurface?" I asked. "Show me." The display zoomed in on the area Skippy suggested we take shelter. First a regular video image, then it flipped to show what lay beneath the surface. "The satellites we have aren't designed for this sort of scanning," he explained. "I'm having to make do. See the caverns?" There were pockets, some of them extensive, under the surface. Unfortunately, as I played with the display, most of the caverns big enough to be useful for shelter were deep underground and either not connected to the surface at all or connected only by a narrow passage. That was no good for our purposes. We couldn't take the time to excavate a cavern, and we had to be careful not to leave a debris pile on the surface. Hey, how about this? There was an area of canyons and caverns 100 kilometers north of the place Skippy recommended. These caverns are big enough. Some of the caverns were shallow, large openings, but they didn't go deep enough into the side of the canyons to provide real shelter. That is a possibility. I didn't think you would want to be in an area of canyons. Some of those canyons are subject to flash flooding in summer as the glaciers melt.
I hear you, Skippy. That's a good point. What I need is to talk with a geologist.
We had one geologist on the science team. Technically, she had only minored in geology. Her focus was astrophysics. Dr. Kastner came to my office, since the whole science lab was in an area of the ship that currently had no heat, power, artificial gravity, or breathable air. "What about this area?" I asked, pointing to the canyon lands on my tablet. "Some of these caverns appear to be large enough to house us and deep enough into the hillside to keep us out of sight."
"We won't be in tents, then?"
Kastner asked with a frown, brushing a stray lock of blonde hair away from her face. I shook my head. "No, tents are too visible. If the Kristang fly an aircraft over the area, we can't risk them seeing anything. We will have warning of their aircraft approaching. It may not be enough time for us to strike the tents and get everything hidden. I don't want to take that risk. Besides, the weather on this planet can be harsh,
I'd rather everyone is in a relatively dry cave than in damp tents on the surface.
Dry may be a relative term, Kastner mused. These canyons channel meltwater in the summers. You can see erosion layers, recent, last season. We also don't know how shallow the water table is in this area. Caverns could flood from the bottom.
Colonel, she said while nervously tugging on a ponytail,
you understand that the last time I seriously studied geology was 20 years ago.
I know that I'm asking you to guess.
We don't have enough data. Historical data, she protested.
How about this, then, I said. Are these caverns structurally sound? Flooding is a potential problem we could deal with. A roof collapsing on us isn't. Kastner frowned as she manipulated the images going deeper underground.
Do you need an answer right now?
No. Realistically, I didn't need an answer until the Flower docked with the ship loaded with supplies and people and was ready to jump again. At that point, Chang did need to know where his dropships were going to land, and whether we were going to Newark at all. Sims had a small mountain of supplies organized and ready to be loaded aboard the Flower. Enough supplies for 8 months, as a precaution, in case Skippy ran into problems rebuilding the Dutchman. Major Sims had hardly slept. As our only logistics specialist, she had to figure not only what supplies we needed and how much, she needed to have everything organized so that the first two dropships to land contained the equipment the first wave of people needed. Combat loading, we called that in the military. Weapons were unloaded first, socks were unloaded last. The two dropships were being loaded now. Chang hadn't needed them aboard the Flower for his scouting mission. No, Doctor, I'll need an answer in about 10 hours. Talk to Skippy, pull in whoever you need. Keep in mind, whatever site you recommend will be where we'll be living for the next 5 to 8 months. Comfort is not our major priority. Safety and concealment are. We had enough data about Newark and the Kristang there to make a decision. Not only a decision about where to land on Newark, a more basic decision about whether to land there at all, whether to take the risk of us being on Newark. To advise me, I called together my command crew of Chang, Sims, and Adams, plus the 5 Spec Ops team leaders in the CIC. With much of the ship closed off, the CIC was the only compartment large enough for a meeting of more than 4 people, unless we all stood in a corridor. As there was nothing much for a crew to do in the CIC with the ship dead and drifting, I had cleared the compartment. Thank you, I said, as a harried-looking Major Sims came into the CIC, a portable oxygen mask still hanging from her neck. She'd been down in the cargo base, supervising the teams packing supplies for Newark, and Skippy had been forced to cut off the fresh oxygen supply to that area of the ship. Now that we're all here, I need your advice. We now have enough information about Newark to know that we can survive down there, and we know that we soon will not be able to survive aboard this ship. We also have information about the Kristang on Newark, and we have a limited, substantial, but limited, ability to mask our presence on the planet from the Kristang. The question is whether we can take the risk of going down to Newark, and my advice, Skippy interrupted, is you go down there, you dum-dums. That's why we came all the way here. What else are— It was my turn to interrupt him. Skippy, I appreciate if you can provide information, but this primarily affects us humans, and this needs to be our decision. No, Joe, you are the commander. This is your decision, he said simply, and the people in the CIC all nodded. You once told me that one of the drawbacks to being in the military is that the chain of command requires you to put your life in the hands of people who may be idiots. Today, you are that potential idiot. I trust you will do your best to make a wise decision. Joe, I will refrain from comment unless you request me to join the discussion. Thank you, Skippy. The question is whether we can take the risk of going down to Newark. Not risk to us, because if we don't go to Newark, there is 100% certainty that we will not survive. Once Skippy begins tearing the ship apart to fix it, there will be no oxygen and lethal levels of radiation. The risk we have to consider is the risk to Earth. The risk that our presence on Newark may be discovered and Earth could be targeted by aliens, regardless of whether the wormhole is available to shorten their trip there. When we came out here, our mission was simple. We assist Skippy in contacting the Collective, and we do not take any risks with aliens discovering that humans are roaming the galaxy in a pirate ship.
Except that's not quite true, is it, sir?
The SAS team leader, Captain Smythe, observed.
I still found it jarring that a badass soldier spoke with such a refined British accent. Smythe was SAS. He could probably kill me with a paperclip. Any of the special forces could. With his oh-so-proper accent, Smythe sounded like he would kill me, then apologize for not having been quite sporting about it. Terribly sorry, old chap. That sort of thing.
Our prime mission objective is not zero risk, that other species will learn we humans are out here roaming around, as you say. The objective is minimal risk. Otherwise, Colonel, you could have detonated a nuke as soon as our friend Skippy shut down the wormhole. He looked around the CIC. We all know the stated mission objectives. We also know what hasn't been said. Not openly.
Go on, Captain Smythe, I said. I wanted a frank and open discussion, and I was getting one. This was good. The people in the CIC all had far more experience than I did with making command decisions. I needed to listen to them. Smythe continued.
First, our true mission out here is to assure this Skippy being doesn't decide that we're not upholding our end of the bargain and reopens the wormhole near Earth out of spite.
He glanced at the speaker in the ceiling. We all expected Skippy to respond to that remark. When Skippy stayed silent, Smythe pressed onward.
Our second unstated objective is to hopefully return home in the Flying Dutchman, so humanity will have an advanced starship to take apart and study. We all believe aliens have no access to Earth now. That may not be true in the future. Colonel, you found a way to manipulate wormholes. Who is to say some other species will not gain the same capability? Or these periodic wormhole shifts could bring our local wormhole back to life.
Skippy had told me our local wormhole was dead, shut down, that the connection to its power source was severed. He hadn't specifically assured me that wormhole could never come back to life on its own. Damn it, I should have asked him about that. Smythe continued, looking straight at me.
Some of you Americans, before the Second World War, believed that because you are separated from most of the world by two great oceans, you need not fear invasion, that the problems of the world were not your problems. Our entire planet now faces a similar situation. We are protected by vast interstellar distances for now. That happy circumstance will not continue forever. We need the technology of this ship to enable humanity to leap forward, so that when trouble does come knocking on our door, we will be ready. We all know trouble will come knocking someday.
They were nodding heads all around the CIC at that remark. Smythe's comments opened the floodgates. Everyone wanted to weigh in on the decision, for or against. After 10 minutes of spirited discussion, all eyes turned to Captain Zhou, leader of the Chinese Night Tiger Special Forces team. He had been mostly silent until he cleared his throat and people waited for him to speak.
Captain Smythe, what you said is true. There is no question that we need, he pointed at the deck, the technology of this ship. This is a matter of balancing risk and reward. The risk of our presence on Newark being discovered against the possibility of bringing this ship home without Mr. Skippy. My pilots and our scientific staff, I assume he meant the Chinese contingent, have told me there is very little chance we can fly this ship all the way home without our benevolent AI friend helping us. We must weigh the very slender possibility of the Dutchman returning home against what I believe to be the very real risk of the Kristang learning we are on Newark. We control the satellites, certainly. What will happen if, when, a Kristang ship jumps into orbit to retrieve their scavenger team? That ship's sensors would surely detect us.
That started another round of discussion, this time not about whether we should land on Newark at all, but about what level of risk was acceptable. Essentially about how confident we were about our ability to remain undetected, and what we could do to minimize the risk. After another 20 minutes, everyone had said all there was to say. The British, Indian, and SEAL and Ranger commanders were in favor of landing on Newark. The Chinese and French commanders were against taking the risk of landing. That René Giraud was against landing surprised me.
There must be an alternative, and if not, he shrugged.
I didn't expect to live this long, Colonel. There it was. 4 experienced combat commanders in favor of going to Newark, 2 against. They all had made good arguments, and they all were right about one thing. This was a matter of judgment. My judgment. It was my decision. I nodded slowly, more to give myself additional time to think than anything else. Very well. I've made my decision. We're going to Newark. The risks are real. Ultimately, my decision comes down to this. I have to trust Skippy. His assessment, with all his awesome analytical power, is the risk is minimal and manageable. Giraud nodded slowly.
We have seen Skippy do amazing things, certainly. Sir, have you considered that this alien AI is putting his thumb on the scale when he is weighing the risks? He needs us to risk landing on Newark, because us surviving there and returning to fly the ship for him is his only way to avoid being stranded in space forever. If our presence on Newark is discovered, it will be a disaster for humanity. But to Skippy, it will be the same as if we'd never gone to Newark in the first place. Our taking the risk of landing on Newark has no, as you Americans say, downside for Skippy. His only chance for a future is for us to risk the survival of our entire species for his benefit.
I have considered that, I replied. Captain Giraud, you need to consider this. If all Skippy cared about is continuing his journey, he could have flown us to a star system that has a usable gas giant planet for him to repair the ship, but no habitable planet for humans. He could have told us that our only option is to select a small number of people to survive in a dropship or something while he rebuilds the Dutchman, and everyone else is out of luck, dead. That option would have worked for Skippy, and he would have had a large number of star systems to choose from. He didn't do that. He found us a place where we can all survive. I'm going to trust him.
Joe did not look happy. Colonel Bishop, I fear we are risking the lives of billions of people who could not participate in this decision.
And as he said that, he shared a glance with Chang. A chill ran up my spine. For a moment, I feared Chang and Joe had secret orders to take over the ship. With much of the ship disabled, Skippy's ability to interfere with a mutiny was limited. Joe continued.
It is your decision to make, Colonel. What are your orders?
Inwardly, I shuddered with relief.
Colonel Chang, do you have the schedule for crew departure?
Decision made, I contacted Kastner and asked her to come to my office again. She looked like she hadn't slept much either. Dr. Kastner, we are going to Newark. You've analyzed the data brought back by the flower? She was startled.
Colonel, I wasn't aware there was a question about us landing on Newark. Isn't that why we're here?
Now, there was a question about the security risk of us landing, I explained. We've resolved those concerns for now. We're going to land. The question is, where? She pointed to her iPad.
There is a mountain of data here. Even with Skippy's help, we've barely skimmed the surface. It's not just that we don't have enough relevant data to analyze. Some of the data we have doesn't make sense. The oxygen level, for example.
It's not going to be comfortable at first, I admitted. We will need time to adjust. Skippy told me the oxygen level is equivalent to Earth at 10,000 feet of altitude, and people live in those conditions.
Yes, yes, you don't understand, she said. Our question is not why the oxygen level is so low. It's how the oxygen level could possibly be so high. It doesn't make sense.
Oh, I said, thinking I understood her question. Sure, because there aren't any trees down there to convert carbon dioxide to free oxygen.
No.
She couldn't keep a tiny measure of fatigued irritation from flashing across her face. When Skippy implied, or outright stated, how ignorant and dim-witted I am, that didn't bother me. No human could compare to his intelligence. When Kastner looked at me pityingly, as if she were talking to a particularly slow, small child, that pissed me off. She must have sensed my irritation, because she hastened to add,
"That is a very common misconception, even in the scientific community, except for people who specialize in biology. On Earth today, plants such as trees do generate substantial amounts of free oxygen. However, single-celled organisms utilizing photosynthesis converted Earth's atmosphere billions of years ago from an anaerobic state to a state saturated with free oxygen. This was long before the appearance of any land plants. The buildup of free oxygen was delayed by minerals on the surface, such as iron, absorbing the free oxygen until the mineral base became saturated. At that point, we think the free oxygen reduced the amount of methane in Earth's atmosphere. Methane is a powerful greenhouse gas, so falling methane levels triggered Earth's first ice age. That may be what happened to Newark. We simply do not know yet. The level of methane in Newark's atmosphere, we think primarily from volcanic activity, would indicate a substantial greenhouse effect is occurring. That tells us the planet should be warmer, that it was warmer in the past, considering the oxygen levels. Interesting as I found this info, and I did want to know more about it eventually. I needed a decision from her. There was plenty of time for me to learn about sciencey stuff while we huddled in caverns on Newark, months during which I'd need something to do while the time slowly passed. None of this is likely to affect our ability to survive down there for a few months?
No. Colonel, I mentioned it only to show you how woefully uninformed our decisions will be. Whatever the source of the atmospheric anomalies, they will not affect the ability of Newark to support human life, at least in the short term.
Great. Excellent. Has the science team selected a location?
The canyon lands you mentioned appear to be the best candidate, she said. There are two caverns there that are large enough to house our population and deep enough into the hillsides that the heat we generate will mostly be confined underground. You said concealment is our top priority in selecting a site. Infrared radiation is our greatest liability in terms of concealment. Assuming we will have advanced warning of overflights by Kristang aircraft, we can turn off lights and get everyone inside the caverns. Heat, however, will linger. The rocks of the caverns will absorb heat, and it will be slow to dissipate. Therefore, another benefit of the canyonlands is that roughly 8 kilometers to the south is an area that is geothermically active, with hot springs. Skippy told us the Kristang have not bothered to explore the surface of Newark in detail. Excess heat emanating from our caverns could be explained by geothermal activity if we are careful not to generate heat while the Kristang are overhead.
Got it. I was pleased the science team had considered security in ways I hadn't even thought about. Of course, 70 humans and our shelters and cooking and heating water for sanitation would generate a lot of heat. I should have thought of that. What about stability? Are the caverns stable? In addition to my fear of heights, I wasn't thrilled about the idea of being underground with millions of tons of rock above my head. You said the area has hot springs?
Not in the immediate area of the canyons. These caverns, these two caverns here, she tapped the display to zoom in, appear to be stable. The rock around them is,
she paused, smiled, seeking a word I would understand,
solid. We'll know more once we get down there. We think we could live in these two large caverns, here and here, and close by are other, smaller caverns we could use to store supplies.
And the rivers. What happens when the glaciers melt in the summer? There were streams or rivers running down the bottom of each canyon.
We think,
she looked me in the eye to emphasize the team was making an educated guess,
based on erosion layers in the canyons, that the entrances to these caverns are safely above the flood level. There are other caverns in the canyonlands, she indicated them on the screen, that are flooded currently. Both of the two major caverns we recommended have secondary outlets that are large enough for a person or could be enlarged to allow a person to crawl through. If the main parts of the caverns do flood, we won't be trapped.
What she didn't mention was that all the gear we needed to survive would be underwater. I nodded. That's a manageable risk, I said. Hell, what did I know? I was an inexperienced sergeant pretending to be a colonel. Good. Doctor, you'll be on the first pair of dropships to land. Colonel Chang will rely on your assessment of the sites. Chang would command the Flower and be taking the first set of dropships down to Newark. With me being almost 2 hours away for two-way communication, Chang would be making all the decisions on his own until our stolen Kristang frigate came back to get me and the remaining people and supplies. I hope Chang knew that I was going to trust his judgment completely and not second-guess him from the other side of the star system.